All right, everybody, Roz and Sean, good morning to everybody, and I hope everybody's having a pleasant day on this Wednesday, July 8th, and welcome back to my podcast. This is Cold Blue, New York Giants Football Talk, and I'm your host, T-Mac, and today I'll be discussing the pandemic known as the coronavirus and how it has impacted the sports landscape from a fan's point of view. Now, the NFL season is approaching, but not so fast. We have training camp approaching, mostly all 32 teams facilities all being allowed to open up, where players can go in and meet with the new trainers and staff, go into the weight rooms, work out, train, but there's still a limit on things they can do. So with that, we're going to discuss with the pandemic and how it's impacting sports landscapes. Now, from what I'm hearing and reading daily, it's possible that games are going to be telecast without fans in the stadium, and that's going to have a new twist on things right there. So let's just think about that for a minute. Now, the New York Giants, who play at MetLife Stadium, I believe the capacity of that stadium is about close to between 75,000 and 80,000. I remember the old Giants Stadium at the old Giants Stadium was well, could fill 80,000. I believe MetLife Stadium is between that same range. So just think about that. How that looks watching it on TV, or if you're a fan and you go to live games in person, how that looks. Because I've been to a live game, and when you just looking around the whole landscape of a stadium, you're looking at the lower tiers, the upper tiers, you're seeing the fans and you're having a good time and you're seeing the play of your team on the field and they're battling it out. That's fantastic. That's what sports is about. You know, the energy, fans, the energy of the players and vice versa. We bounce that energy off each other. We yell, we root for our favorite teams, and it's beautiful. Even when I'm sitting on my couch in my living room or my bedroom watching the game and I'm excited, I'm fussing at the TV. If my team make a boneheaded play, I'm cursing them out like, how can you make that play? Or getting mad at the coaches like, why would you call that play? And, if the opposing team makes a score, you frustrated with them and, it's like being at the live game. So the fan interaction is great when you're watching sports. Just imagine when this upcoming season begins, and if that policy is in place where there could be no fans in the stadium, or maybe just a limited amount, that's going to look just totally awkward. Just seeing no fans in the stadium, but you got plays on the field, that's just like having a pickup game. Like if you're playing football, like when we were kids, you choose your sides, you're playing football, you're mimicking your favorite player, like, Dan Marino to Mark Duper or Montana the Rice. We all did it as youngsters and kids. But that's going to look different. You got professional men out there, athletes, men and women that's going to be playing in their respective sports, but they don't have no fans to root them on and give them that energy. That's going to be totally different. Wow, I'm looking forward to seeing that. Like, if it's gonna play out like that, and no fans are gonna be in the stadium, how's that gonna affect broadcasting rights? The TV networks who have the rights to the games. That's gonna be weird. I don't know how they're gonna manage and work that out. But these are the times we live in. So my thoughts on that is like, I just gotta wait to see what it looks like, and because I'm definitely gonna watch, because I'm a fan. I love football, and I'll be interested to see how that plays out. Are they gonna have more players mic'd up so you can get a inside audio of what they be saying in the huddle? I already know what's going on in them huddles. Just a lot of trash talking and bravado. All that trash talking. You ain't this, you can't hold me, you can't guard me. That's all you're going to hear, but you don't see fans in the stadium. You don't have the TV cameras that show you different angles of the stadium, and they zoom in on the fans, booing or just, you know, cheering for the teams, that's going to take away the excitement of watching the game. Trust me. It's going to be different this year. You know, man, I mean, worst case or best case scenario is this, we get this disease under control and the WHO and the CDC can say, yeah, okay, we have this disease under control. Proceed back to normalcy. And I mean, everybody can go back to work without feeling scared. We can be safe. We can ride the subways, the buses. We can drive to work safe. We can take our kids out, meaning we don't have to wear these masks. And that's another thing, you know. Sports are contact sports. Most sports are contact, but players are engaging in physical touching. And football in particular, I believe, is the most physical contact sport where you're touching. Most every player is touching each other in football. 11 versus 11. In those pileups and those scrums, those scrummages, person is getting tackled. People are diving for loose footballs. Quarterbacks are running for their lives, trying to avoid being hit by a defensive lineman or a linebacker or a safety blitz. They're getting touched. Bodies are on top of each other. So my thoughts is, even if you keep this in a limited capacity, these players are going to put themselves at risk if they choose to play, because they're saying that states like Arizona, Texas, Florida, you know, California, they're seeing a resurge, a spike and increase in these cases of the COVID-19. So in those states where the teams represent, you know, you got teams that play in those states. And you already got, the seasons have not even begun, and I'm reading that this player has tested positive. This player has tested positive. And these players are not even back in the buildings of their facilities yet. So how are they catching this disease? From what I'm reading and hearing, it's like players are catching this or testing positive for it with taking safety precaution measures. That's like just baffling. So this disease, from what I'm seeing and reading, is definitely airborne. I mean, don't get this twisted. You can catch this disease, probably have it, and probably just be what they call asymptomatic, or your immune system just is strong enough till it just doesn't affect you to the point like it affects others. Like they're saying, it's most going to affect the elderly. It's affecting the elderly. People over 40, I believe 45, in that 50 to 60 range. You know, but I don't know, man. This is like a weird time that we're living in. So I just hope for the best and hope this disease is corralled and put to rest, you know, so life can go back to its normal ways, and so we sports fans can have fun and root for our teams, and hopefully it don't be a shortened season. You know, this is it's already shortened certain sports league seasons, and you know, you got the NBA, if I can just expound on that for a minute. The NBA has lost months of their season, and now they're starting a restart season in Orlando, Florida, at the Disney, one of the Disney sites. I've already read that a lot of players are, you know, declining to join after they said they would play. Players have gone home, probably spoken to their families and loved ones and said it's not worth it. They're declining to play. And who can blame them? NBA players, that's a contact sport too. And at its essence, a lot of NBA players were affected before, you know, a lot of other athletes, you know, with the Rudy Gobert's and his teammate. I can't forget what is his name. Sorry about that. I'll get it. But, you know, starting with the Rudy Gobert's, then you had Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, you know, a lot of prominent big name players. I don't know, man, how they're going to swing this and make this happen. You know, I don't want them to sound selfish and say, yeah, I want them to play just because I'm a fan. But at the end of the day, it's the athlete's decision. And I respect the decision if they say, hey, I don't want to play. I respect it if we don't even have a sports season. Health is the most important thing. Health is wealth. Now, all these players who've been in their respective leagues for more than 8 years or more, if you're a seasoned veteran player, wherever you play at, NBA, Major League Baseball, NFL, lacrosse, boxing, UFC, tennis, golf. Come on, I know you got money saved up. I know some players waste their money, or some players make bad investments, but a lot of players do make good investments and don't spend, you know, money on foolish things. You know, save your money. That's what you're supposed to be doing. You know, you save money for rainy days, and these are rainy days. We have a storm upon us, and it's called coronavirus. So, me personally, this is just my thoughts and opinions. If I'm a player, if I'm an athlete, and I've been well-to-do and made enough money, and I know my family's straight, I'm not putting my life at risk. I would wait this out. Spend time with my family, because you never know. It might not be a next time. I'm just saying, tomorrow's not promised. So a lot of these men and women have kids at home and wives and husbands that sacrifice their time or lack of time with their husbands because they're on the road. The NBA's at 82 regular season. NFL's a 16-17 week. Major League Baseball is 162 games. You know, these players are on the road. They're not seeing their wives on a regular basis or their children. And those wives sacrifice for these athletes, you know. And if athletes want to make a choice, like, hey, I want to stay home with my children and wife, I'm not going to play. You know, thumbs up to them. I'm not mad at all. So you got to, you know, family's important and health is important. So, just hopefully that this coronavirus is kept under wraps, and we're going to solve this and defeat this sooner rather than later. And I do believe we will be victorious sooner rather than later, because that's what this country is about. You know, we stand together, we fight, we get through all types of adversity, you know, and this is just another hurdle in the road for this country, and we'll make it through. Now, let me move on to this topic. We're going to talk about my man, Saquon Barkley. He's entering his third year, and this guy is going to be a key to a Giants offense. I know everybody's focusing and zeroing in on Daniel Jones and his development, and that is important also. But the Giants need to get back to a smash mouth, run it down your throat team. You don't take this guy number two overall. When you take a running back number two, you basically took him at number one. You took him at number two. He was the first running back off that board in 2018, I believe. Yeah, we drafted Saquon in 2018. Number two overall. Dave Gettleman bet the house, said this guy's a Hall of Fame. He's a Canton Gold Jacket player. And I also believe that. You watched his highlights at Penn State. That was just a man playing amongst boys. I mean, that's what I always say. When these scouts go out there and say, they use the term, the eyeball test, that's what you see. Saquon is a player. He balls on every down. High energy, high motor, brings it every play. Even when he runs negative, he brings it. He's tough. He runs between the tackle. You know his speed on the outside is bar none. Now, he can catch the ball. Let me tell you, if Jason Garrett, and I'm going to get to Jason Garrett in a minute also, but Jason Garrett has to make Saquon the primary focus on offense. Let me tell you why. Just for this alone, I attended the Giants game versus the Washington Redskins December 22nd of last year, 2019. By the way, shout out to my lovely wife, Kelly. She took me to that game. She surprised me, and I love her for that. That was my first pro game ever in my life, and we had a blast. And I watched that game, which the Giants did win, But by winning, we also lost out on getting Chase Young. Wow, how ironic. But anyway, that game was great. We won it, and I believe that game went into overtime. Yeah. And we won it in overtime. There was a play, I think, in the first half. Like, I mean, Daniel Jones played one of the best games of the year in that game, and it was back and forth. There was a pass that Daniel Jones threw to Saquon Barkley, and it was a dime, man. I mean, Saquon caught this like a wide receiver, and it was on point, and it was a long pass. I mean, it had to be about 30 to 40 yards, one of those pass plays. And I looked at that, and I'm like, wow, that's a running back doing that? I think he rushed for two or three touchdowns in that game, caught a touchdown pass. I mean, he just had a career day, man. And if the Giants fixed that O-line, man, which I hope, this has been like 3-4 years in the making, man. They've been drafting linemen, offensive linemen, you know, to rebuild this line. Because if you watch these games, man, a lot of that is Saquon doing that on his own. If that line becomes serviceable, very good, what I mean, at the line of attack, when they hand him the ball off, and he has one little crease, Saquon does not need a big hole. If you give him a big hole, he's going to be, that's a home run. Because he has that ability, once he gets through that hole, once he gets through that first line of defense, it is a wrap. Them DBs ain't trying to tackle him downfield. You know the term. They make business decisions. Once he gets past the defense, that line and them linebackers, that's a wrap. Saquon is taking that to the house. He's shown it already in his career. He's a home run hitter. But a lot of times in his first 2.5 years in the league, he has no opening. You gotta give your running back a hole. Offensive linemen's jobs are to engage into the line, engage with your defender, put a hat on the hat. What I've seen from the Giants offensive linemen, they don't get their arms out to keep the defender at bay. Once these linemen improve and get that done, and they can make holes for Saquon, the Giants will be formidable. Saquon Barkley is that type of running back with those skills. So the Giants have to fix that, get that offensive line working, and Saquon will take care of that. And with Jason Garrett's ability in his play calling, which I do have faith in, and I believe Jason Garrett is a better OC than head coach. I mean, he was a very good head coach. Dallas did make the postseason a few times under his tutelage. But sometimes a head coach, it's not a head coach. He might just have a niche. I think Jason Garrett's niche is being a good OC. Just like when he preceded Wade Phillips back in the days, we found out that Wade Phillips wasn't a very good head coach on many of his stops, but he's a damn good defensive coordinator. And sometimes that'd be the case. I think Jason Garrett's going to bring us back to prominence, where the Giants will be one of those offenses to be reckoned with. You know, we got the talent. We got it. We got Saquon. We got Daniel Jones. If Daniel Jones can take that leap and just improve each year and cut over on his turnovers and those wide receivers develop, you know, if Evan Ingram can stay healthy. We got Golden Tate. Don't know how many years we'll have Golden Tate. We got, I like what I saw in Slayton. He's coming into his own. If he can just improve, keep improving. Have Daniel Jones trust him. I think he can be a very good, if not a number one, a definite number two wide receiver. And we still got number 87. Man, I'm getting amnesia. What is his name? We just gave him that contract. I'll get it. Just give me a minute. But number 87, we got talent on offense. It's just about that offensive line coming together. Once that offensive line improves, you know, those guys get in the trenches, learn to lose and win together. Because when you lose, you get tired of losing. So once that offensive line gets enough battles, goes to battle, and goes up against the good teams, from them losses, you become winners. You just improve. You still sharp and still. And once they learn together, bond on and off the field, hang out, you know, your mindset changes. You get tired of losing. That's the one thing in sports. Don't accept losing. And I know this Giants staff from the rookie head coach, Joe Judge, I know he's going to keep hammering that home because he said he wants a team for 60 minutes. He's going to mold this team into fighters, smash mouth football, punch you in the nose for 60 minutes, win, lose, or draw. So I like what I see from the mindset of Joe Judge and what he has in place in store for this team. Can't wait. I'm excited to see how this team turns out. I'll give it a year or two. He's a rookie head coach. So you got to give him about maybe a year or two to mold this team into his identity and to turn these players into champions. And I think it'll be done, you know, sooner than later. Because the Giants, you know, they showed games last year where they had that look, okay, they turned in that corner. And to turn a corner in the NFL and in our division, which was not a competitive division, I mean, that division could have been, any team could have won the NFC East last year. The Giants lost a few games here or there, about maybe a touchdown or less. We really didn't get blown out in a lot of games. We were competitive in a lot of games. And that's what I saw. So that's what I mean about them turning the corner, because they weren't blown out in a lot of games. They just didn't have the talent on defense. That's another thing I'm going to get into. That defense has to improve. That's the number one thing. Because I'm not worried about the offense. The offense with Jason Garrett's system, I think we're going to be fine. It's that defense I'm more worried about. That defense gave up too many points. And I mean, it was bombs over Broadway. Those rookie corners, I know they were rookies, but my God, I mean, I'm tired of saying rookies, because I've seen other teams coming with rookies and they rookies shine right away. But you have to have interchangeable parts. You have to have other players in place to make those rookies good. See, this is another thing. I get tired of saying, oh, well, they were rookies. No, I see other teams draft rookie players. And when you look at those teams, those rookies don't struggle. You know why they don't struggle? Because they have good coaching and development. And then they have other parts of the team that make their jobs easier. The Giants didn't have a pass rush at all. Besides the 10 sacks we got from Marcus Golden, who else was a threat on? Who else scared quarterbacks? Nobody. We didn't have a pass rush threat. We haven't had that in quite some time. You know, we could have took the kid Allen, who went to the Jaguars. We could have took him number 6 and still got Daniel Jones at number 17. I don't care what you guys say. Daniel Jones would have still been there at number 17, despite what Gettleman claims that he knew from sources around the league and a couple of teams that were looking at Daniel Jones. Man, if you watch that draft, all the teams who needed quarterbacks had quarterbacks. At number 17, nobody was going to take Daniel Jones because nobody thought of him that high. He would have been there. That's why the Giants should have took Allen at number 6. In my opinion, they should have took him. Allen had a very good rookie year. I think he had about 9.5 sacks. He's only going to improve. That's going to be a double-digit sack player. Trust me. But that's neither here nor there. We didn't take him. We took Daniel Jones. And now we got to help Daniel Jones develop into that quarterback. You take a quarterback, number 6 overall, you expect him to play at a consistent high level for the next 10 years. That's just how it goes. Number 6 overall. Think about that. He was drafted number 6 out of Duke. Duke is not a big, big football factory for quarterbacks. Last time I checked. But he comes highly recommended from Coach Cutliffe. You know, the man and families give him high praise. Now he has to show it. But, like I said, everybody throws that term, rookie, oh, give them a break, they were rookies. All right. That cornerback Baker, who got in trouble this offseason, who has legal problems, I don't know how that's going to play out, but he struggled mightily. DeAndre Baker, struggled mightily in pass coverage. Okay, now with his legal problems, I don't know where his mindset is at, but he better be on the ball this year because he's going to be on a short leash. And, you know, we brought in Bradbury from the Carolina Panthers. We got Julian Love. We drafted this guy, Xavier McKinney. We got some players to work with. So the new defensive coordinator, Patrick Graham, I believe, if that's his name. That's our new DC, Patrick Graham. He has his hands full. And that secondary coach, they got to develop those DBs have to become better than what they've been showing the last several years. Because if you can stop the pass, that helps your pass rush. I believe that's the way it's supposed to be. The secondary helps out that pass rush, not the other way around. Just in my opinion. If your secondary can give up, well, not allow long passes, that means nobody's open. That means that opposing quarterback is holding their football longer than he needs to, and then your pass rush should get there to collapse that pocket. Or just make that quarterback move off that platform. Get him off that sweet spot. Have him throw the ball away. That's what the secondary does on defense. Secondary does their job, makes it easier for the front four, the linemen up front. And, you know, we got to learn, and hopefully the Giants can develop those defensive tackles to push that middle of the pocket, man. That's important. Now, as much as the edge rushers are important, that middle rush needs to be worked on too, the defensive tackle spot, that pressure up the middle. Quarterbacks hate that. Once they got to move off that sweet spot and throw it to the side that they're not comfortable throwing it to, you know, that takes the timing away. We all know that. So we got guys like the big boys in the middle, the Dalvin Tomlinsons. I want these guys to make that leap, you know. Can they make that leap and improve? Hopefully so. We'll see. Still to be determined how that's going to turn out. The Giants got a lot of holes on that roster that needs to improve. Linebacker being one of them. I like what I saw from Connolly last year before he had to go down with that injury. Looked like he had a nose for the ball. That was promising. So hopefully he can recover from that ACL tear and get back on the field because we need those linebackers that have speed. That's another thing the Giants have been lacking in years past, sideline to sideline speed, chasing down ball carriers in the backfield, preventing those third and fours, get them guys off the field. Once the Giants can prove in those areas, third down defense, the Giants will have a better chance to compete in that NFC East. And that NFC East has been the NFC least. You know, the Eagles scraped by 9 wins. Cowboys finished 8-8, mediocre, when everybody was picking the Cowboys just to walk away with that other division. And you know what's been the Giants and the Redskins' MO for the past several years, bottom feeders. You know, that's why I'm not worried about the Giants and stay where they're going. Because every time when you live in a cellar, you can't do no worse. So the Giants have been living in the cellar for several seasons. It's time for them to take that elevator back up to the top. If we capture that NFC crown, the NFC East crown, it's doable. They can go from worst to first. I've seen it done many times. But that is going to be contingent on Daniel Jones and him taking that leap, along with Saquon Barkley, along with that offensive line, improving. And I mean, playing like alpha dogs. The Giants got to become a mauler of a team. You have a alpha dog running back. We have a grade one, grade A running back there. Do not waste his formative years. I've seen that done too many times. Do not waste his years where free agency comes and he wants to leave because he doesn't see the team moving in that championship direction. You see what it forced Barry Sanders to do. Oh, yeah. That's the main reason why Barry Sanders walked away from the game. You know, he felt like that Detroit Lions was not moving in the right direction. Even though they were making the postseason, one and dones, or they may win one round, but it was mostly one and done with Detroit Lions. Barry Sanders got tired of that. Hey, his desire wasn't there. He lost his desire to play. And a lot of experts are saying that's who Saquon reminds everybody of, Barry Sanders. Please, New York Giants, I'm pleading with you. Do not waste Saquon's formative years. Utilize his talents. Maximize his talents. We can make a run for the next 10 years. This guy's only entering his third year. Daniel Jones is entering his second year. We have a relatively one of the youngest teams, rosters in the NFL on offense and defense. You know, the average player on the Giants is probably 23 years old. And we got a lot of homegrown talent. That's another key thing. I'll give that to Dave Gettleman. He's drafting his players. You got to keep these core guys around. Homegrown talent, meaning the guys you picked, handpicked yourself, keep these guys in place. And then just add depth. Keep adding depth to the roster. Because I know the guys that Gettleman has picked, they're going to turn into good players. We already got our superstars. We got Saquon, that's our star player. Hopefully Daniel Jones can turn into our star quarterback. I don't even need Daniel Jones to be quote-unquote an elite quarterback. Just be a very serviceable, very good, take care of the football quarterback. And then we'll be good.